My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. As we begin to talk about the habits of a highly deceptive media with our guest, Norman Solomon, joining us from the Bay Area today. Norman, thanks for being with us on the program.
My pleasure.
Well, I appreciate that you were able to be with us. And I listened to you yesterday on Eric Siljak's Global Kitchen program and really, you know, stayed riveted for the entire interview. You know, you said an interesting thing, though. Eric asked you a question about why the media was doing what it was doing along the lines of the coverage in Yugoslavia. And you said, well, the media, the corporate media, is really doing what it's always done. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, the mythology of the news media, I think, has always been in conflict with the realities of it in terms of independence, assertiveness, you know, willing to be a watchdog. And I think it's far more than rhetoric to say that generally the news media have functioned more like lapdogs than watchdogs when it comes to the rich and the powerful. You know, sometimes we wax nostalgic to the good old days back when we're told there was this feisty press. You would have, in a city the size of Sacramento, you might have five or six daily papers. You might have a dozen in San Francisco. But often those media outlets were actually owned by just a few tycoons, and they were always responsive to the desires of those that owned the press. So that's been the reality. And we may have different illusions at different times, but I think with some exceptions, that's been the basic function of mass media outlets. And one other thing I want to be sure and mention is that often we get, I think, diverted from the overall effects of news media because of exceptional stories. But the essence of propaganda is not the exception, it's the routine. You know, it's the drumbeat, it's the themes, the information, the selective disclosures that are emphasized time after time, and that's what really has the propaganda impact.
We're talking with Norman Solomon, and if you don't know who Norman Solomon is, well, you should. And we're in particular talking, and I want to focus on your latest book, Norman, The Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media, but suffice it to say that you have written numerous books, some nine, I believe, and have been, in my opinion, one of the most articulate and erudite analysts and critics of American media. And if you just really know how to explain this stuff, and God knows it needs explaining. Norman, one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about today was the subject has come up regarding the whole issue of media and its coverage of the Columbine, Colorado school killings, and then from that, media as a whole regarding violence and its content. But one of the things that my wife said to me one time was that you don't waterproof kids by keeping them away from the river, you waterproof kids by teaching them how to swim. And, you know, it seems to me that with all the other educational endeavors that public schools take on, perhaps one of the real things that they should take on is teaching people how to actually deal with the media and the bombardment of information that comes at us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Can I get your thoughts on that? How do we deal with the media? And then we can talk about in particular how the media goes about doing what it does.
Yeah, it is a cultural and political environment that's surrounding us, and there's no point in trying to put our head in the sand about it, because just walking down the street, there are billboards. There's all kinds of media coming at us, and sometimes a metaphor I think of is unidentified flying propaganda. You know, it's coming at us from all sorts of directions, and the more we can kind of, so to speak, put up our radar screen to track it and to understand it and to hopefully see through it, the better off we are. You know, whether it's in our personal lives, having to do with the ways in which advertising and mass marketed entertainment play at very real feelings, pull at them, exploit them, inflame painful feelings, utilize them to give us the idea, which is often not intellectually conveyed or understood, that if only we will buy things, if only we will own expensive products, if only we will accumulate wealth and spend it, then we will be happier, more desirable, good people. These are powerful messages, very powerful, and they run parallel to the kind of messages that tell us that it's okay, in fact, it's wonderful for NATO to be dropping these 2,000-pound bombs on populated areas because somehow we should be insulated from the realities of what's done to people underneath those bombs. And that kind of insulation, that you might say emotional numbing and psychic numbing, that's very powerful. And we need to, as you say, get aware for how to swim through it instead of drowning in it.
We're talking with media analyst and author Norman Solomon. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Norman, you know, you were talking about this sort of numbing effect regarding the bombing in Yugoslavia. But then on the other hand, we have this oversaturation of bringing the violence of Columbine High School into our living rooms when, you know, in the aftermath of that tragedy. Can you talk a little bit about the media coverage of the school killings?
Well, I think it fits into the pattern of worthy and unworthy victims. And although there's no edict coming from on high, it's very well understood through example and imitation and what is considered by journalists in the mass media to be appropriate news judgment, that there are worthy victims and unworthy victims. And it's pretty clear, if it isn't at the outset, it becomes very clear quickly, I think, in most cases, that when some people are massacred, they are worthy victims, and it's a tragedy, and we should mourn, and we should denounce the murders. And what happened at the high school just outside of Denver a few weeks ago clearly fell into that category. The horrible atrocities visited upon the ethnic Albanians in Kosovo, they, in the U.S. news media, fell under that category. But you can think of so many people who are suffering, not from the decisions made far away, but from the decisions made in our own country, and they are deemed to be unworthy victims. So, you know, who are examples of them? Well, the Kurds in southeastern Turkey, who have been often tortured, imprisoned, murdered, suppressed, had their culture repressed by the Turkish government. They are unworthy victims because Turkey's part of NATO. Turkey is an ally of the United States and receives aid. So here we have, in point of fact, the government saying, and the U.S. media implicitly or explicitly echoing this idea, that some atrocities, some torture, some ethnic cleansing, if you will, is reprehensible and should be responded to with bombs, and some torture, some murder, some ethnic cleansing, as it's called, is fundable and should be financed by the U.S. government and our taxpayers and winked at by our U.S. media, and that is the case with the Turkish government and how they're treating their Kurds.
We're talking with Norman Solomon, author of the book The Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media, one of the number of books that Norman has authored regarding the media and analyzing how it works and how it doesn't work, perhaps. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Norman, one of the things that I think when something big happens, a lot of people then tend to focus on how the media covers that individual event. But one of the things that you bring out in the Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media is that the media is doing this kind of shifting and choice making all the time. I mean, this is just part of the process of what the corporate driven media does, correct?
Yeah, and these decisions, which are filled with value judgments, they're laden with all kinds of decisions that are subjective and have to do with power and precedent, they're couched in terms of professionalism. You know, you don't have somebody walking into the Sacramento Bee or the New York Times newsroom, sitting down in their chair as an editor, say, in the business section. You don't have them saying, you know, I'm a running dog lackey of corporate America. They say, I am a professional journalist. I make my decisions based on what we professionals understand to be proper news judgment. And that's all well and good and sounds fine, but you take that example and you could wonder aloud why the Bee or the Times has a business section 365 days a year and has a labor section 0 days out of the year. And there's no real good explanation for it other than power and precedent.
We're talking with Norman Solomon about the media. Norman, you ready to take a phone call?
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, Mike. Good afternoon, Mr. Solomon. I talked to you yesterday. I wanted to make a comment about the Columbine shooting thing because I watched it all day long. At first, it was a continuous coverage and with very few breaks, and that went on till prime time, about 5 o'clock or so. And then they started breaking it up into bits and segments. And about 7 o'clock, they started analyzing their own coverage, you know, the media talking about itself, how significant they were and, you know, how important it was and all that kind of stuff, and what they could and couldn't say. My question to you is, as a journalist, since you do depend upon the very media you criticize for your income, just really, how impartial can you be? I mean, can you really advocate anything? Can you advocate, for instance, you know, in terms of war, that people don't pay their taxes? Mm-hmm. Can you advocate general resistance? Can you advocate anything other than criticizing and sort of holding the mirror up to yourself and your peers? The media, it's really self-absorbed. I mean, this show itself, it's talking about the media. You know, you talk about the media as though it is something other than a tool, you know. Can you talk to those issues?
All right,
sure.
Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, appreciate your comments. Well, you know, there's media, and then there's media. There's KVMR, and then there's CBS News. They're not the same. And I often think of something that Larry Bensky, the Pacifica journalist, has said. I think he called it Bensky's Law, and it goes something like this: the more they pay, the less you say. And I think that that generally is the case in terms of saying substance and tough, critical, scrutinizing journalistic work. So that is a dynamic, and I think perhaps the caller is partly alluding to the phenomenon of in-house media critics. So you have, for instance, Howard Kurtz at the Washington Post, or you'll have David Armstrong at the Examiner, and they're called media critics, but they're on the payroll of these huge corporate institutions. They're not going to get very tough with corporate media. I think that's a given. And I actually, my livelihood doesn't much depend on that. My livelihood's kind of low income, and I'm not on a staff of any major corporate media, so the upside is I have a lot of freedom.
Well, you know, it's lucky that your income doesn't depend on corporate media, Norman,
yeah,
because
right.
I can't think of anybody who scourges them as quite as much as you do. I'd like to say something to the caller, just in response, for whatever it's worth. One of the things that happens, of course, is that in particular with radio stations, in particular with community radio stations, the ones that are legally licensed through the FCC, the government holds a lot of power, and if you advocate things that the government feels are against its regulations and whatever, they can come in and they can take the license of your station. When you have, in particular, a community radio station such as this, whatever my personal beliefs may be regarding whether or not people should engage in certain types of activities, be they civil disobedience or being illegal, I am under some responsibility to also realize that this isn't my license to play with. And, you know, I may want to say that certain people do certain things or certain people don't do certain things, but I'm not in a position to put the asset of a community at risk because I have a personal opinion about whether a person should pay their taxes or not. That's why I'm a big fan of micropower radio, and in particular some of the people who are saying that they're going to operate outside of government regulation, outside of the licensing process, because what they're saying is exactly that. Once I buy into the FCC licensing process, then they have power over me. Can you talk a little bit about micropower radio and that venue for broadcasting news and information, Norman?
I think it's an important element and part of the mix that we need in the real society that we live in. Part of the legitimacy of micro-broadcasting comes from the illegitimacy of the Federal Communications Commission and the federal apparatus, because if you go back to history, and Robert McChesney has a great book out, Telecommunications, Mass Media, and Democracy is the name. You go back to the late 20s, where there were a lot of grassroots groups, the Grange, religious institutions, colleges, labor unions. They had their own radio stations, and they were relatively low wattage. And then as radio began to be more widely heard, the corporations of the day moved in and gained essentially control, for the most part, over the licensing process. And you had the forerunner of the FCC kicking community groups off the air, limiting their broadcast power, saying they could only broadcast during daylight hours, and giving more and more wattage and power and stations to the companies that had a lot of capital. So if we had airwaves that truly belong to the public, in fact as well as in theory, then I think you could make a case that micro-broadcasting isn't needed. But as long as the FCC continues to serve basically as an institutional flunky for corporate America, we're going to need micro-broadcasting.
This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. We're talking with Norman Solomon, media analyst and critic, also author of the book, The Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media, among others. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, I'm a graphic designer, and I work with visual information all the time, and I'm well aware of the power of visual information. But our school system is built around reading and writing. But as mammals, we go out in the world and we pick up 95% of our information just visually. Mm-hmm. We decide to not read something and it's already communicated to us. So one thing we can do is with our kids, look at ads in magazines or cereal box covers or TV commercials, and you play a game of what are they trying to trick us? What are they trying to make us think? If I buy this toothpaste, I'm going to have this beautiful woman's going to like me. Or I'm going to have this great car. Or my relationship with my dad will be much better if I buy this brand of alcohol.
Absolutely.
And you get kids looking at it like that, then they grow up aware.
Well, we're talking about teaching children how to swim in the media stream.
Right, right.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Sure.
Norman, I wanted to kind of move to a topic since we went to radio. And I'd like to ask you, and you know, I know that FAIR has had some issues regarding the whole thing going on at Pacifica and KPFA. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, there are five Pacifica-owned stations in Berkeley, L.A., New York, Houston, and Washington, D.C. And Pacifica also, of course, has a nightly news that's heard on maybe 60 or 70 stations around the country. It's an important resource, and particularly in KPFA, the contradictions between management that's becoming increasingly corporate-oriented and the strong constituency that is progressive, that wants independent media to raise fundamental issues of justice and human rights and economic human rights as well as other types, that sort of a constituency is, I think, very understandably up in arms at the heavy-handed management tactics being used by National Pacifica at this point against the staff of KPFA. And frankly, I'm amazed and very happily amazed at the unity that we've seen in the past couple of months among the KPFA staff. It's coming into a tough period because Nicole Sawaya, who was fired as the general manager of KPFA, has not been reinstated. Larry Bensky, who was fired for speaking out on such issues, has not been reinstated. And we're going to need to continue to demand that Pacifica get right on this.
Frankly, my concern, I think, was more piqued, if you will, and certainly, I mean, the management issues within KPFA and Pacifica and the firings is important, but when I found out that Pacifica stations actually censored part of a counterspin broadcast, in some cases editing things out, in other cases just simply cutting it short because FAIR and Counterspin dared to actually cover the issues happening at Pacifica. I mean, I found that much more troubling, frankly, than the firings. I mean, if Pacifica is going to start censoring material, boy, that's real scary.
Well, really, the Circle of the Wagons response to the controversy has been, as you say, in many ways the most disturbing of all. When a few weeks ago, Counterspin, the program produced by FAIR, which I should say I've been a longtime associate of, when Counterspin interviewed Larry Bensky and, as usual, put out the program in weekly syndication, for the first time in the history of the program, it was censored on the basis of content by one of the radio stations, which was first KPFK in Los Angeles, owned by Pacifica, then a few days later by WPFW in Washington, D.C., also owned by Pacifica, to the point that the program in the D.C. station was actually interrupted and an emergency broadcast system signal was put in instead of the interview with Larry Bensky. I mean, this is kind of the thing you'd expect from a totalitarian regime. So I agree with you. This is very troubling. And, you know, FAIR has tried to take a position that as a media watch group, it needs to be critical of the corporatization of media and the anti-democratic trends of media anywhere, and that includes Pacifica-owned stations.
We're talking with Norman Solomon, author of The Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media, also analyst and media critic and associate of FAIR, as Norman so stated. Norman, there are so many topics in this book, and as always, of course, we're not going to have enough time to do them all, but can you talk a little bit about the punditocracy?
Yeah, the circle, you know, we've had term limits imposed on politicians, but there are no term limits on pundits. And they will be on until the cobwebs form around their lips. They are on the chat shows. By the way, the program The Capital Gang, I finally figured out the real meaning of that name. You know, I used to think it was because they were based in Washington, D.C.
Right.
It actually has to do with capital. And they are serving the interests of capital. I mean that quite literally. These are the folks, the pundits who are put on the national chat shows. They're not rocking the boats. They make the sponsors happy. They make the owners of the networks happy. The pundits who take up residence on the op-ed pages across the country. And the Sacramento Bee is really no different than most dailies. They will give you a constant diet of those pundits who have been vetted and provided by outlets like the Washington Post Writers Group and the major prestigious syndicates like the New York Times Service. We're not getting diversity, and that's what the punditocracy is all about.
The danger with that, I think, is twofold. Is one, you know, you have, I'm thinking now in particular of the program Crossfire, where, you know, they used to say from the right, Pat Buchanan, and from the left, Michael Kinsley. And that's really a very, very misleading type of statement. I mean, because that it tends to try to give the impression that we're getting a full range of debate, but we're really not, right?
Right. Well, Michael Kinsley, I'm not a leftist, but I play one on TV.
Right.
That's the gist of it. Al Hunt on some other programs. I keep thinking it's really indicative of the kind of skewed spectrum of mass media that someone who is Washington bureau chief for the flagship newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, of Dow Jones Company, is put forward as a representative of the proletariat of the planet. I mean, it's a little bit silly.
And what happens as a result of these pundits being sort of omnipresent is that, I mean, really, these few people who, for the most part, as you so stated, are serving capital, you know, they wind up crafting the entire public debate on very, very important issues that face all of us.
Absolutely. They frame the debate such as it is. They signify the limits of discourse. And whether it's the McLaughlin Group or Capital Gang or Crossfire or myriad of other programs, they essentially convey, without needing to explicitly say so, go this far and no farther. And the assumptions that are shared about the legitimacy of corporate domination, the validity of this kind of economic control over our possibilities by concentrated capital, these are assumptions that are extremely powerful and a form of propaganda that is so implicit and tacit that we're encouraged to simply accept it as part of the natural scenery when, in fact, it absolutely flows from political and economic control, which is concentrated in fairly few hands.
We're speaking with media analyst Norman Solomon. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was feeling frustrated with KVMR's news, like, over the last, like, year or something, just because the top story always seemed to be Monica Lewinsky or, you know, of course, Yugoslavia. And then when Noam Chomsky came on, he was like, yeah, well, what about Colombia and Turkey?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, the Associated Press, is that's where in the Union, you know, oh, it was the Associated Press that sent it all in. And so how does KVMR get its news, and what does it decide is going to be the top story, and, you know, that kind of stuff?
KVMR's news is pretty much dictated almost by who's going to be doing it that night. And I don't know that I can say it any plainer than that. Unfortunately, when we had Monica all the time, I would like to think that KVMR was at least trying to put some sort of different analysis and different spin to it. And, you know, Yugoslavia has been a big story. And once again, I think I would like to take the time to try and defend KVMR's coverage and saying we have been covering it, but certainly covering it from a very, very different angle. And then also, I I think, trying to add some context that you're not necessarily getting in other media venues. Norman, I'd like to move in the few minutes that we can to talk about your stint on CNN several weeks ago. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, the propaganda system is about repetition, and the media wall is very tall and very thick, but there are cracks in it, and I was able to just get into one of those cracks and maybe create a bit of one in the CNN broadcast a few weeks ago. I was on with Daniel Schorr, the NPR news analyst, and the New York Times reporter, Judith Miller, who has covered a lot of stuff in terms of foreign military intervention and so forth. And it was a live broadcast, which I was very glad about because no one could leave any of it on the cutting room floor. And I basically raised issues of how the Fourth Estate, during the bombing of Yugoslavia, is in this country functioning largely as a fourth branch of government, or as I put it, providing stenography services for the powerful instead of being independent and assertive and scrutinizing our own government's conduct in a substantive way. And I guess, as you would know, Mike, from looking at the transcript, Mr. Schorr and Ms. Miller did not exactly respond in a friendly or receptive manner to my observations.
I would say that would be an appropriate way of viewing it.
And I, as I say, I was glad that it was live. It was an unusual experience for me in that it was a major national TV network. It was live. It was during the middle of the day, and it was a chance to raise these issues. So on the one hand, I felt very good about that, but the exhilaration quickly dies down for me in these situations because one realizes that we're spitting in the ocean, and the ocean is created by the mass media, and we're just doing our best to find every which way we can to mitigate the flood of propaganda that is just drowning us. And I think we all need to find every way we can to raise these issues on KVMR, on 100 radio stations around the country where people do have a foothold to raise crucial questions about economic and political control in this country in a progressive spirit that supports human rights and dignity for everyone, whatever their economic and racial and sexual orientation and other backgrounds. And these are precious opportunities, and certainly we encounter huge obstacles in the process.
We've been speaking with media analyst and critic Norman Solomon, author of the book The Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media, published by Common Courage Press. And Norman, one of the things that happened last night, and we just have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to share, is that I participated in a KVMR broadcaster training class, and we were talking about doing news and public affairs programming in the community radio venue, if you will. And, I mean, we're really talking about, I believe, a fight for the essence of democracy, as Bob McChesney might put it, correct?
Right. Oh, I think so very much. And as much as it's an abused word, I think the concept of democracy has to be there, that it shouldn't be in this public arena, essentially $1, one vote, or the more dollars, the louder megaphone, the bigger platform. And if our vision is real democratic discourse, we're going to have to fight like hell for it.
Norman Solomon, author of the book The Habits of a Highly Deceptive Media, thank you for being with us on the program. We'll have you on again, I hope.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Norman. That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.